Welcome. Thanks for being a part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak, and if you care about water quality in our region and you care about what's happening along the coastline and the harbors, then we've got a show for you. Some experts have told us that the situation is better than it was decades ago. But obviously, there are still pockets where, to us at least, it's obvious that so much more work is needed. We'll be talking about that today, and we'd like to get your comments about what you're seeing and what you think should be done. You can email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org, and you can leave a comment on our Facebook page, and that page is Full Story WSHU. Now, our program today was prompted in part by an article the other week on the Connecticut Health iTeam website, and it was a three-part report, and it took a close look at what's going on in Black Rock Harbor. Now, you may be saying, where's Black Rock? Black Rock is a community in Bridgeport, which is Connecticut's largest city. The author of the report is Chris Woodside. And Chris, it's good to welcome you to the full story for the very first time. Great reporting.
Thank you so much.
Chris, why did you pick Black Rock to write about?
Well, I knew I wanted to write about the problem of chronic sewage overflows. And as you said in your introduction, not as many cities have that problem as used to, say, 30 years ago. But I knew that every time it rained, there were a number of places where sewage is basically just going right into Long Island Sound. So since 2012, there's been a website available by law that will chronicle overflows at sewage treatment plants. So I started looking at that website and the reports of legal bypasses that are now available to the public. And I noticed that this one plant in Bridgeport at the end of Bostwick Avenue was overflowing a lot and that the overflows seemed to be significant. So I decided I wanted to go down and take a look at that neighborhood, and I realized there was a seaport there, there was a sailing school, industry, a landfill, and the sewage plant, and a residential area and a beach all together, and I became intrigued.
Now, Chris, full disclosure, I lived in Black Rock for a number of years, close to a decade.
And it's a wonderful neighborhood.
It's a fantastic area. It truly is. And I can attest to the fact that this has been a problem for decades. Why has this been going on for so long?
Well, it just seems that the way the law is set up and the enormous cost of fixing these things, you put those two things together and the timeline is usually decades or more. And every 5 years, cities are allowed to revise the plan. And then the state which is enforcing the clean water law for us, the federal law, we'll look at it and help them figure out a timeline. So we're just looking at millions and millions of dollars and lots of bureaucracy. I, too, as you say, it just seems amazing that this isn't the number one priority in society. And I thought it was time to get it in front of people's eyes again and really think about why we have these long timelines.
Okay. But I guess I'm kind of confused because you say there's a lot of bureaucracy, and that's true from other reports that have been done in the past. So what I guess I'm trying to find out is who actually makes the decisions here? Is it going to be the city of Bridgeport to fix up the plant? Is it going to be the state stepping in? Is it going to be the EPA who's going to say, look, this is affecting Long Island Sound. It affects other communities. Who's in charge of getting this done?
Well, the state is in charge of enforcing the federal clean water laws. And right now, the city of Bridgeport has orders from the state to fix this problem. So as a result, they are slowly beginning the process of replacing some pipes and looking into storage when there's too much flow and all those things. But the way the state enforces it is they have to figure out how it's going to get paid for. And that's where the city has to they usually have to have a referendum for bonding. And they have one plan that's going on right now. And as you can see, it's just it's like a negotiation for how you meet the order that it is constantly being monitored, basically, by the state. And it is the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection that makes sure these things get followed.
Bridgeport, you and
but
I.
Right now, the consent orders are saying, you know, you've got to fix this. They've got 20 years, basically, to fix it.
So the problems that we're talking about, and you mentioned a legal bypass, which I'm going to ask you to explain in a moment, but these problems that we're talking about are going to continue for a number of years more?
Yes. Yes, they are.
And there's nothing that anyone could do about it in the meantime?
Well, I think it all comes down to money. And I am not an expert in that part. But if it seems to me that if a source of money to help municipalities make these improvements more quickly were to reveal itself, the timeline could change.
You mentioned
right now, for instance, there's a consent order from 2009 that said this is an example from New Haven, that New Haven has a completion date of 2036 from a consent order they got from the state that's 10 years old. That's how long these things are taking at the moment.
You obviously spent a lot of time in Black Rock. You saw what the situation is in the harbor and what takes place there around Captain's Cove and the other areas. When the discharge comes out, what are we talking about? What ends up in the water?
When the discharge comes out, it's a mixture of stormwater runoff, like rain, that will be washing in anything that was on the pavement, which could include oil and trash and pet waste and all sorts of things like that, mixing with the waste from people's toilets and from their washing machines and their sinks. All that stuff becomes this soup that it discharges into the harbor in one of two ways. One is called a plant bypass, and I can explain that more if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is called a combined sewage overflow, which in a very high rainstorm, when there's a lot of rain or snow falling, these combined sewage overflow pipes, which are all over the city, will just discharge the untreated soup of waste right into the harbors.
So we're just seeing a lot of garbage going straight into the harbor, and it's raw stuff, and it just floats there on top of the water.
Right, and then it dilutes and works its way slowly out to the Sound. That's right.
What's a legal bypass?
A legal bypass is when there's a certain amount of rain falling, and what it usually is in Bridgeport is 0.44 inches, which is about a half an inch, and the plant cannot handle a flow of more than a certain amount. So when you get that much rain, they are allowed to begin to speed the process. So the sewage is going through the plant, they're running it through the screen, so any kind of objects ought to be screened out. And then they give it a shot of chlorine, and then they, by law, give it a shot of a chemical that dechlorinates, and then it goes right out the plant. That's it. There's no settling. There's no biological breakdown. The thing that normally happens over many, many hours is just fed right up, and it goes right out. And then we got the other problem of there have been times in pretty recent years, and including this year, when equipment has not been working at the Black Rock plant. The screening system was not working for a while, and so even the objects weren't getting screened out properly.
Are the residents
so
up?
They were going right in. The settling of material was not happening. So that was all going into the Sound.
Are the Black Rock residents up in arms? Are they angry?
They're very angry. Several of the residents have been angry about this for a long time. There's a group of them who started a conservation group some years ago in the Ash Creek area, which is one of the tributaries of Black Rock Harbor. But this it was in 2018 when there was an especially ugly looking discharge. No one could really figure out what had gone wrong at the plant, but someone took a picture of it, posted it on Facebook, and that galvanized people. They held a meeting. They got their city councilman, Pete Spain, to hold a meeting, and they said, we want to do something. So there were kids in high school at the aquaculture school there, and a guy who runs a dive service. He cleans boats. His name is Kevin Blages, and several other people, and Save the Sound, which is an environmental effort, the sound keeper named Bill Lucy, all these people came together, and they decided they would take part in a water study called the Unified Water Study that is coordinated by Save the Sound. And they just wanted to do something. So these kids started getting up at 5 in the morning or so and getting on a boat before sunrise with Kevin Blages and their teacher, Holly Turner, and some of the others. And they would follow the careful guidelines of how to collect water samples. And all those samples and the data they collected will be part of this Soundwide study that other volunteers are doing all over the place around the Sound.
Hey, Chris, I'm going to ask you to hold on just for 1 second. I have to take a short break, but we're going to pick up this conversation right after the break. Chris, you and I were just talking about the reaction of those who are residents of the Black Rock area in Bridgeport. And I said, are they angry? And you said, yeah, they're pretty angry. Why aren't there more lawsuits trying to get things changed? Because you're saying that the situation is going to go on for quite a number of years, and the city and the state basically have 20 years to get this all going. Why aren't residents doing even more to try and fix this problem quicker?
Well, I think they were getting ready to possibly take some legal action this last year. And they decided that it would be better if they tried to work with the state. And so let me think about this for a second. Last spring, so actually was, you know, in spring of 2019, the state held a public information meeting with the neighbors and anyone who was interested. And I went to that meeting. And part of that was an effort to explain how this was going to get fixed. And so the residents and members of some of the environmental groups decided that they would not take action at that point. That's as much as I know at this point about that. I do think there's a feeling of sort of despair about it, that we can't seem to do anything and this is taking so long. You know, right now there are 11 projects that the state has ordered the city to fix, just separating stormwater pipes. And then there's even more work to fix the sludge processing. And then there's, you know, the long-term improvement of the plant that they have 20 years to fix. It's just a feeling of, gosh, how long this is going to take.
Yeah.
So I think maybe people feel that a little bit just worried that a lawsuit would make it take longer. I don't know exactly what's going through their minds about that.
And from Bridgeport, and from Bridgeport, right. From Bridgeport's perspective, is they've been shouldering a lot of the burden for a long time. Their residents are already highly taxed. They have to do so much in terms of providing services for residents of the city. And then they're being told, OK, you have to fix up this plant and maybe, you know, you have to raise taxes even more to pay for this. And so I'm sure Bridgeport officials are saying, look, we'll be happy to do this, but how about a little assistance from the state or the feds to take care of this?
Well, and there is assistance available from the state. It's by many standards pretty good assistance, but that still leaves millions of dollars that the city has to come up with, usually through bonding. So even with the pretty good assistance that Connecticut offers, it's still daunting.
Hey, Chris. Chris, is this unique to Bridgeport? Are there other areas in Connecticut that are suffering with the same problem?
There are other cities in Connecticut that are going through this. And as I mentioned earlier, New Haven is one of them. And if you give me a second, I can get the others.
I believe in your article you had mentioned Hartford and Norwich.
That's right. Yes, those are the others. We used to have many more cities that were going through it. So slowly these overflow situations have been corrected. But, you know, Bridgeport is the state's largest city, and New Haven is one of the largest cities. And there are a lot of people in these cities, and it's time to get this fixed.
Well, I know from speaking with residents of Bridgeport in the past, some of them have been very frank, and they've said, look, this would not happen to wealthier communities along the Sound. The reason this is happening is because it's Bridgeport, and it's simply unfair.
Well, I think it is certainly true that wealthier communities can have better sewage treatment plants. There's no question, because you raise the money through the taxes and property values are out the roof everywhere. But yes, I would agree. I would agree that that's true. But you also are dealing with the sheer volume of population. So that means that the plant is handling a lot of waste.
Can I ask what the city officials or those who work at the plant have told you?
In what sense? What have they told me?
That are they saying, look, we're doing the best job that we can with the resources that we have, and if you want us to do more, well, give us more.
I think that, yes, what they have told me is they are following the law, which they are. They are doing the best they can. That's what they say, and they have been fairly communicative with the local people, especially the family, the Williams family that runs the seaport down there. But the city was not. I wanted to talk to the water pollution control manager more than I was able to. The city told me I could not have a long interview with her. Her name is Lauren McBennett Napa. She was very helpful as far as she could be, and I appreciated that. They gave us a tour of the plant. But I, after that happened, I was instructed by the mayor's office to submit questions by email, brief questions, which she did answer for me about technical things. So, there's a feeling that they're doing what they can following the law, but they do not want to talk in great detail about it. They have a lot of problems with that plant that they're struggling to fix, and it's going to take a while. And I definitely felt that my access to the city officials was tightly controlled.
Chris, I was wondering if you had attempted to speak with officials from any of the nearby communities from Bridgeport, because as you said, when it gets discharged into the harbor, it then makes its way out into the Sound, and then it can go anywhere. And so I'm wondering what the officials in Stratford and Milford and Fairfield and Westport had to say about something like that.
Well, we have a bunch of follow-up articles planned, and one of the things I'll be doing is looking at those surrounding communities, because for one thing, we have beaches around there. The Fairfield Town Beach is right downstream of the Bridgeport plant. So that is in my plans. For this series, I was really focusing on Black Rock and what they were doing and trying to explain it. But you have hit the nail on the head for what we're going to be doing going forward. This story is not going away.
No, it's not. It's been around for a long time, and obviously it's going to be with us for decades more. When are we going to see your next reports?
Well, I'm going to begin, looking at the timelines for some of these repairs that they're doing. There's some work that's been going on now, and I want to keep on top of how they're doing with that. And I'm also going to get a handle on how it will be funded, because that's almost a whole other story. How do you fund these things? I guess we have to talk to the editor, but I think sometime in the next few months, we will probably get together for our first follow-up.
And then when those reports come out, we'd love to have you come back on and tell us what you found out.
Yeah, I'd love that. You know, we're also we're going to keep our eye on the state representatives up at the Capitol who are paying attention to this and the Environment Committee. We wonder if they will respond in any way to the series. We'll see whether they hold any hearings or do anything further, and I'll be on top of that as well.
Chris Woodside, Connecticut Health iTeam reporter. Chris, excellent articles, and we look forward to the future ones and having you back on the air with us. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Now, for the remainder of our segment, we're going to spend a few minutes with Roger Reynolds. Roger is the senior legal counsel for the Connecticut Fund for the Environment. And Roger, we appreciate you coming on today. How are you?
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
So you heard the conversation. When you hear about situations like what's taking place in Black Rock Harbor, and you hear about how long it's going to take to fix it, what do you think?
Yeah, so my organization is Connecticut Fund for the Environment and Save the Sound. And Bill Lucy, the soundkeeper who Chris was talking about in his great article, is part of our organization. So we've been working on this article, this problem for quite a while. And we have what's called a campaign for a sewage-free Long Island Sound. The basic premise is we're about 50 years after the passage of the Clean Water Act, and it's really unacceptable to be continuing to discharge raw or partially treated sewage into the areas where we swim and fish and boat. So we've been focusing on communities for several years now. We actually threatened suit against Bridgeport several years ago, which caused them to create this plan, which they're now implementing. And as Chris was talking about, we petitioned for a hearing earlier, and we're getting ready to bring a suit when the state issued three orders of its own requiring them to spend almost $1 billion, about $800 million over the next 20 years in some instances, over the next 8 years in some instances. So this is a huge problem. It should no longer be occurring, and we're taking action on a statewide basis to stop it. And I can talk more about that, and I can talk about, you know, Bridgeport or wherever you want to go. But thanks so much for highlighting this.
Oh, it's our pleasure. But we only have 6 minutes, unfortunately, and it's not enough time with you today. So I'm going to get you back in the future very soon, so that way we could really spend enough time on it. Let me ask you this. It sounds like you got some of the money, I think, that you need or would like to remedy it, but I don't understand why it would take 2 decades.
There's just an awful lot of work to be done here. This is a historical accident. When they built these old cities, they built the storm drains to run into the sewage treatment plant, which is great because stormwater is dirty too, and that treats it, but it creates this problem where you overwhelm the sewage treatment plant and it can't handle it. So Bridgeport and Hartford and Springfield up north were tagged with these old problems, and they're the poorest regions to try to clean them up. So they get tagged with these billion-dollar price tags, and then they have to do it on their own. Hartford has a region to do this. Bridgeport is on its own. One of the big picture solutions we want to see is regionalization. We want to see Fairfield. We want to see Trumbull. We want to see the other towns in the region participating in this and bringing their resources to the table and addressing this problem. You know, that being said, it's a huge problem. It's a huge public health problem. We've got to solve it. And what we've decided is the state orders were strong enough that we are going to monitor them. We have independent authority under the Clean Water Act to bring our own actions, and we do. We sued Danbury and got a $100,000 penalty several years ago for a different type of raw sewage discharge. So we are going to monitor this closely, and if they fall off this schedule, we are going to bring suit immediately, and we have the authority to do that under the Clean Water Act. So what we're saying is this schedule is slower than we wanted, but we're going to keep you to it. And in 20 years, this is going to happen, or we're going to see you in court.
Okay, you mentioned a possible regional solution, get the other towns involved. What are the odds that that will actually happen?
People have been talking about that for quite a while. It hasn't happened. I think the towns are hesitant. So we had brought that issue up about 8 years ago, and unfortunately it didn't go anywhere, so we're focusing on what the situation is now. But if people want to know about a long-term regional solution, I think that's it, to have a big regional authority like they do up in Hartford.
Roger, I'm wondering why other towns along the shoreline aren't more upset about this, because when this waste heads out into the Sound, it just keeps going. It affects so many.
Yeah, they're very upset about it. It's a chronic problem. And you know what? The towns along the shoreline have their own problems. Fairfield discharges a lot of sewage into Long Island Sound through sanitary sewer overflows where they don't maintain their system enough. Other municipalities have their problems. So this isn't limited to Bridgeport. That being said, the towns are very upset. And when we go in our campaign for sewage-free Long Island Sound and ask these other towns to clean up their act, they're saying, what are you doing in Bridgeport? And we're telling them exactly what we've done, exactly what Bill Lucy, our soundkeeper, has discovered in Black Rock Harbor, and that we're going to hold Bridgeport accountable to fix this problem. And it may go slower than we want, but we're going to have steady progress, and it's going to get done.
Roger, I only have 2 minutes left in the segment. With those 2 minutes, can you tell us about some of the other communities or harbors where you think the work needs to be concentrated on in the very near future?
Yeah, absolutely. We're doing a lot of work in Stamford Harbor that has a lot of issues. We've actually, in Westchester County, we've brought a lawsuit against the county and 9 municipalities there for their sewage overflows. It's really, as you get further west, it gets to be a big problem, peaking at New York City. So all along Fairfield County, this is a huge problem that we have to focus on, and that's why we have our campaign for a sewage-free Long Island Sound, and that's why Save the Sound is going to be sticking with that until our waters really are sewage-free.
Are you concerned that with the climate crisis, it's actually going to possibly get worse before it gets better?
Yes, it is getting worse before it gets better. The warming water is accelerating a lot of these impacts we're seeing, and nitrogen pollution, which is also from sewage. The article did talk about low oxygen zones and no oxygen zones that we're finding in Bridgeport Harbor. And that's hugely exacerbated by climate change, which is making it harder, not easier to deal with. So the bad news is we have a lot of challenges. The good news is Clean Water Act, we've made tremendous progress over the last 50 years, and we are going to continue to use the very strong tools there to continue to make that progress and continue to improve Long Island Sound to make it more swimmable, more fishable, and for people to be able to recreate and not worry about their health.
It's been 50 years, huh, since the Clean Water Act was instituted?
That's right. About 48 years. It was 1972. So.
Amazing. Time flies. Roger Reynolds. Roger is the senior legal counsel for the Connecticut Fund for the Environment. Save the Sound. Roger, thank you. We'll get you back on or maybe get you in here real soon in the future.
That's great. Thanks so much for covering this topic.
Thanks, Roger. And now we're going to turn our attention to a problem that's affecting one lake in particular on Long Island, but also many others in our area. Carrie Gallagher is Regional Director of the Department of Environmental Conservation in New York, and she's joining us on the line. Carrie, how are you? Thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you, Ron. I'm doing well today.
We're talking about Lake Agawam in Southampton Village. What's going on there?
So Lake Agawam is experiencing and continuing to experience a harmful algal bloom. And this is, as you indicated, something that's unfortunately affecting a lot of water bodies across the state. And just for a little background, at Governor Cuomo's direction, both the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Department of Health have been leading a multi-agency statewide initiative to aggressively combat HABs, harmful algal blooms, to protect, you know, drinking water, our surface waters, and the economy. And in last year, in 2018, 4 summits were brought together with national, state, and local experts to try to figure out what the best ways were to address this. And then, in fact, after the State of the State announcement, $82 million was invested in competitive grants to try to help address harmful algal blooms across the state. So here, bringing it now to the local level, Lake Agawam has been experiencing, and it is still experiencing, a harmful algal bloom. So because we had the timing was right to test out this new technology, this algal harvester, that's why we decided to deploy the pilot project here at Lake Agawam in the village of Southampton. And it's been running, up and running for 10 days. And the idea was really to demonstrate the effectiveness of the ability to essentially, you know, collect the algae, you know, remove it, treat it, and then return the treated water to the lake. So you're addressing kind of that, the bloom, the result of the blooms.
Hmm. What does this look, this alga bloom, what does it look and smell like?
Yes, well, that's actually a really great question, Ron, because one of the other things we really want people to understand across the state, we are encouraging New Yorkers to know it, avoid it, and report it. So in appearance, a harmful algal bloom can vary. It could be a scattered green dots in the water. It could be a long linear green streak. It could look like pea soup. It could look like spilled green paint. It could even tinge from blue, green, or to white in coloration. So we are encouraging people through our New York HABS website, through the DC website, to report any suspicious blooms that they're worried could be an algal bloom. So they can go to the website, complete the form, attach a photo preferably, and then we have scientists immediately take a look at it to try to ascertain, is this actually an algal bloom or is it something else that they're looking at? And if it appears to be an algal bloom, then we include it in the map on our website. So I would encourage all Long Islanders to check their, you know, if they notice something suspicious in their water body that could be a harmful algal bloom to take a photo of it and report it on our website.
Carrie, we're tight on time, so I'm just going to zip through two or three questions. It sounds like you're saying that this is toxic and we should stay away from it and keep our pets away.
Right. So that's the first note, then avoid it, because people, pets, and livestock should definitely avoid contact with water that is discolored or has algal, you know, what looks like algal scum on the surface. And one of the technologies that we're piloting at Lake Agawam, along with removing the algae, is running it through an advanced oxidation process to try to see if that also removes any of the toxins in the water.
Did humans cause this?
Well, we're not, we haven't pinpointed the exact cause, but there are a number of, we believe, root causes, the biggest being nitrogen and phosphorus loading to water bodies. So certainly any way that we can work on reducing nitrogen, you know, in particular Long Island, there's a lot with the nitrogen loading to our water bodies, that's going to be really critical to long-term mitigation and the ability to, you know, get rid of harmful algal blooms over the long term.
So you're talking about septic systems, fertilizers, pesticides?
Yes, especially septic systems, you know, any wastewater contribution, things like permeable reactive barriers that reduce nitrogen, reducing fertilizer runoff, reducing stormwater runoff into the water bodies, adding maybe sewering if there's downtown areas, those adding riparian buffers, anything that will help uptake the nutrients before they reach the water body.
Carrie, how are we going to know when this is fixed or if the fix works?
So with this particular pilot project, it's actually today is the last day of operation. It's been running for 10 days. So now we're going to be looking at all of the data that we get back from the lab, and we will be determining based on those results whether it's really feasible and effective to utilize this as a treatment technology either on other water bodies here or across the state. So it's going to take us, we need a little bit of time to analyze that and see if it makes sense. But this is not the only thing that, you know, we're testing out. We'll be continuing to, you know, under Governor Cuomo's direction, we'll be continuing to test out additional technologies and really come up with a whole action plan, a harmful algal bloom action plan that involves the community and local government to address the situation both at Lake Agawam and at other lakes and water bodies across the state.
Carrie, I need to mention also that you and I are speaking on Wednesday. We're recording this, but this will be played back on Thursday. So when people hear today, it may be just a little bit off. And also from what you were saying, it sounds like that the fix may not work, but you have to try, right? And if it doesn't work, then you try something else.
Yes, and I think, again, there's the thing that people should remember is their root causes like we were talking about with the nitrogen and phosphorus loading, and then there are the symptoms. So the algal bloom is just the symptom of those root causes. So really, this is helping to remove what people are seeing on the surface and also to make sure that people, pets, and others would not be coming into contact with the harmful algal bloom. But we still need to address those underlying root causes of the harmful algal bloom so that we're not getting the blooms anymore.
Carrie, if you do come in contact with the algal bloom, what happens to you?
Well, so the first thing we'd want you to know is immediately rinse thoroughly with clean water to remove the algae. You should stop using the water, and really we would encourage everyone to seek medical attention immediately. If you have symptoms such as vomiting or nausea, diarrhea, skin, eye, or throat irritation, allergic reactions, or breathing difficulties. That could happen. It may not, but those are some of the symptoms that we have seen. And again, just rinse off thoroughly. And then if you do have any of those types of symptoms, seek medical attention.
Carrie Gallagher is the Regional Director of the Department of Environmental Conservation in New York State. Carrie, thank you. I appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you, Ron. My pleasure.
And we're going to wrap up the program today with two more guests. Jesse Warren is the mayor of Southampton Village. Mayor Warren, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
He's in our Long Island Bureau, and Kevin McAllister is the founder and the president of Defend H2O. Kevin, always good to have you on the air.
Thank you, Ron. Good to hear you, Mayor. I'm glad you're on with us.
Mayor, what's it like at the lake? Does it smell? Does it look bad? How would you describe it?
So Lake Agawam is one of the most polluted bodies of water in New York State. And of course, as a result, it does not look very good. This time of year, and even more so during the summer months, during the peak temperatures, the lake is green. It's got streaks of green. There's likely some spores, and we are suffering from harmful algae blooms, as we have discussed here. And we're very happy to be working with Governor Cuomo and the DEC in order to test out this new pilot program in order to clean some of the blue-green algae off the top of the lake and then work with our residents in our community in Southampton Village to reduce the inputs that we had just discussed earlier with Carrie.
Mayor, how long has it been like this? Has it been years now?
It's been more than years, but each year it gets worse and worse as a result of climate change, as a result of nitrogen and phosphate loading into our lakes, as a result of chemical pesticides and herbicides, which New York State does permit. Now, we've actually tried to ban the use of those, or specific ones in our village, but we're hoping that New York State will change its laws in order to allow that to happen. But it gets worse and worse, but it's been like this for decades. But we're hoping that we will work with our community, work with the DEC, New York State, in order to take care of this.
Kevin, I'm going to bring you in just 1 second. I just want to ask the mayor this. Mayor, what if this remedy only works for a short time? What do you do then? Is there a plan B?
Plan B is actually plan A. This is a solution that will remove the toxic algae off our lake, but we really have to go back to why this is happening. And as Carrie Gallagher aptly pointed out, it's happening due to old septic systems, lack of sewering, nitrogen loading, runoff, other chemicals getting into the lake. So we are working diligently with our residents to promote the use of new innovative alternative septic systems, cluster systems. We're exploring sewering because ultimately when you're putting nitrogen into our groundwater and into our aquifers, that will get into our lakes and freshwater bodies. So plan B that you're talking about is actually our plan A. And then this new technology is going to hopefully remove the toxic algae, but we've got to ultimately reduce the inputs.
Kevin, is this a problem we're seeing more and more?
Oh, definitely. Ron, I just saw a study that looked through aerial photo interpretation, looking back 30 years and looking at hundreds, if not thousands, of water bodies and the explosion of these harmful algal blooms over the last couple of decades is quite pronounced. Clearly, climate change is having an influence on the conditions. Obviously, Agawam on eastern Long Island is one of many water bodies that is experiencing chronic algal blooms year after year.
Kevin, we've talked a number of times. Do you think that climate change is the number one culprit here, if you will, or is there something else?
This is anecdotal, Ron, but I'm in the bush quite a bit, and I know these water bodies quite well over my lifespan. And I will tell you, there's some isolated water bodies that have experienced algal blooms that are not influenced by some of the, you know, the pollution sources that the mayor described. And we are seeing this occur. So, you know, clearly climate change and probably the slight changes in temperature, water temperature, is having influences.
So, Mayor Warren, how do you fight that if it is climate change? How do you fight that in Southampton Village?
Climate change is something that is happening on the global scale, but right here in the local scale, we're going to do everything we can to use new technologies. We discussed the working with AECOM, this engineering company that allowed us to skim algae off the water. But we can do things locally, such as encourage our residents to either reduce or limit entirely the use of fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides. We've got buffer zones, which we can install, which, as we discussed, reduce the loading into the lake. There's a new technology called permeable reactive barriers, or PRBs, which is essentially wood chip technology that prevent all the input from getting into our lake. So while on a global scale, climate change is occurring, and we're seeing that here, there's so much we can do on the local level, and we're doing it right now. Southampton has formed the Lake Agawam Conservancy, a group of private citizens, and we've raised over $500,000 to date to combat this, and we are raising awareness with our residents. But ultimately, every single resident who lives in our village or who lives in Suffolk County or New York State could do everything they can in their part by becoming aware, by making sure they're not putting chemicals and fertilizers on their lawns, and by updating their septic systems and reducing the overall inputs. And then that will be our part locally, and then globally, we just have to do our part as well.
Kevin, I hear what the mayor is saying, but when it comes to lawn care and asking someone not to put down a pesticide and put down a fertilizer, that's asking a lot of some people because they love their lawns.
That's a real problem. You know, at a state level, that's really where it has to happen. And unfortunately, the lobby and the residential push to, you know, have availability of the fertilizers, you know, it's a continuing process. And, you know, clearly that's another area that we've seen increases over the last couple of decades is, you know, lawn care products and particularly the fertilizers.
Kevin, talk to me about the big picture. I mean, this fits into everything that we've been talking about, you and I, over the last number of months in terms of the climate crisis, in terms of global warming. And basically, as you've said in the past, this has to be a holistic approach, if you will.
As the mayor pointed out, obviously there's some things out of our local control when you talk about climate change on a large scale and nitrous gases, air pollution. This has to happen at a federal level, but the actions on the local level with sewering. I'm a proponent of having an overlay district that would mandate these septic upgrades and also explore the possibility of true restrictions on the fertilizer applications. And there's, one source that we have not discussed, and that's the buildup of organic sediments in the water body that is continuously releasing nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus, to the water column, giving, basically feeding the blue-green algae to grow. As the director correctly noted, the algal blooms are the symptom as opposed to, true ill. So we've got to work on several fronts. I know that the village is quite committed. The state is committed. We can certainly do our part, and I think we'd realize improvements if we implement these actions.
Mayor, in terms of commitment, what are your constituents telling you? Are they ready to make changes? Because it sounds in many respects like some major changes will have to be made.
Our constituents are ready to make this change. When you come to our village meetings twice per month, our boardroom is actually packed with environmentally conscious residents. They are excited to see this change, and it is very encouraging to be able to do our job every day, knowing that our residents are behind us. We are working on educational programs to raise awareness, and we are excited. Everybody wants to improve our water treatment We've got grant applications in so we can put in electric charging stations to reduce our carbon emissions. We are working on so much in Southampton Village, and we hope to set the example for other villages across Long Island, New York State, and even throughout the country.
So they're ready to go green to get the green out of the water?
In fact, a lot of residents are starting to realize, that's true, I like that analogy, a lot of residents are starting to realize that there are other ways to make their lawns look perfectly green without having to go chemical. In fact, the two don't really go hand in hand. Obviously, green lawns and nature does not go with chemical use. So I think there's a really good wave of awareness right now, and we're going to see that translate right into the heart of our village.
Kevin, I have 30 seconds left. Final thoughts, please.
I'm very pleased that, again, the village and the state's very committed to this water body, and let's see how the filtration process works. I do think we have to actively address these sources. Again, we're treating the symptom, but, you know, this is doable, and very optimistic that the community and our elected leadership is fully behind it.
Kevin McAllister, founder and president of Defend H2O. Kevin, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ron.
Jesse Warren is the mayor of Southampton Village, and he came into our Long Island Bureau. Mayor, thank you. I appreciate your time today. Please come back soon.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
If you want to comment on today's program, email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org. On Facebook, you can find us at Full Story WSHU, and you can leave a comment there. And if you want to download the program as a podcast, you can do so with, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. We got you covered across the board there. That's going to do it for our show today. Sabrina Garone is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Fatou Sangari, Sabrina Garone, Roberta Rojas. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.